G'day everyone, welcome back to the QSIA podcast series. My name is Eric Perez. I work as a CEO for the organization. Thank you for joining me. Today we're looking at a critical issue for the fisheries, and that's around our trawl sector. Now, the trawl fishery in Queensland has been under considerable pressure from the impacts of the reform process. Like anything with reform, there are a lot of views around what is right and what is not so right when it comes to reform in any fishery, and the trawl fishery is not an exception to that. So my guest today is Steve Taylor. How are you, Matt?
Yeah, good. How are yourself, Matt?
Thank you for joining us. And we're trying to get as many views on this element of the reform as we can. So for those that are listening, we've also extended an invitation to other commercial trawl operators to have a say on issues they're seeing with this particular reform process as it relates to the trawl sector. Steve, the discussion today is about you. And so give us a sense of your experience in the fishery before we get into the questions proper.
I'm second generation in the Queensland trawl industry. It started when I was 16. I'm now pushing 50. A couple of years crayfishing in Tasmania. A little stints here and there doing some other stuff, but only short term. My brother still drives another trawler for another company. I worked my way up, bought my own vessel about 14 years ago. And, it takes up most of my time.
The first question I've got for you, Steve, is we are halfway through the so-called fisheries reform process pushed out by Fisheries Queensland and the current state government. What has the reform in broad terms meant for you as a trawl operator? What are the impacts for you, mate?
I haven't fully seen the impacts just yet, but once Region 3 caps out, it's going to affect my areas I fish over winter. Been concentrating, working there through the winter for the last few years due to operational changes and just getting older and wanting to work in smoother waters rather than out the deep water. So, yeah, if that caps out, I've really got to change my operation and what I'm up to. I have had a skipper doing most of the southern inshore Region 3 work for me. There is the possibility that I won't have that option anymore and I will be on the boat full time again, which after the years I've been doing, I'd like some time at home a bit more, to concentrate on other things. It's uncertainty is probably the biggest thing at the moment. Every time we think there's some sort of direction, there's a change or a manipulation even of the data or something that just doesn't compute with me. And we seem to be ending up with a very convoluted system. And most fishermen don't know what's happening. They don't know whether the caps are in this year and they are. And, so when you've got a fair number of operators not even realising it's in yet because they're not sure, it just develops uncertainty throughout the whole industry.
You said Area 3 capping out. So can you explain for the benefit of the listeners what you mean by capping out?
The cap is the total number of effort units able to be used in each zone. Our effort units were recently zoned. We used to be able to use them on the Queensland East Coast up to the Torres Straits, not including the Torres Straits. They've now been effectively zoned on history of the individual operators. But the cap in Region 3 has been reduced mainly over scallop, which hasn't been targeted really for a number of years. Most of the history has been based on chasing bugs, banana prawns, red spot king. So they're getting affected. But once that caps out to the level for the whole fleet, it doesn't matter what effort units you have in that zone. You can't use them until the next period of cap, which is 1st of November. Once that area caps out, then the fleet has to move into another area, which does cause more pressure in that area then also. And with the planned reduction of caps in those other zones by 2027, you'll start to see areas capping out and vessels just tied up for months on end as far as I'm concerned.
A couple of questions for you. And again, we're trying to educate an audience that may not understand trawl fishing. Can you give us the layman's definition of what an effort unit is?
Effort units were based primarily on the size of the vessel in volume terms. And you need so many effort units to actually trawl for one night. Example, my boat requires 57 effort units to do one night. So when every night my boat does in a zone, it's 57 effort units off that cap. But if you got vessels that are working more than others, boats that don't work that often or want to work more for a lifestyle could end up tying up when they've still got effectively quite a lot of effort units within their license.
Also, it's a race to use your effort units, and once they cap out in a region, if you've got any spare for that region, you can't bring them into play.
No, not for that particular year of the cap.
What was your understanding of the rationale for putting in zones? I mean, I get why they would want to zone the coast because it makes their management job a lot easier than allowing the fleet to move along the coast and give you the flexibility to do that. So why do you think the zoning was introduced?
To some degree, I'd say it's external pressures from outside the industry, from NGOs and the like. From a management point of view, probably having zones may make it easier to manage in that regard. I mean, I believe they could have actually managed the zones without actually locking people in, because once you actually split things into zones, you could end up with a disparity between value of each zone. Obviously, if you're in a zone that's going to cap out all the time, well, surely your effort units aren't worth as much as someone else. But in the last 20 years that we've had, or 22 years we've had effort units, you've been paying for to retain them effort units the same as the next bloke. So to have some disparity in that capital value can affect, or could affect, some businesses severely.
And by those businesses, do you necessarily mean those that are not fishing all the time?
Well, that would be more coming down to the cap of actually stopping them going to work, that side of it. I'm talking about the actual value of it if you wanted to sell it, because, yeah, I'm talking about disparity in the value of the actual license. I've got a mate who paid $52 an effort unit 20-something years ago. They even got down to less than $4 a unit, and they're back up to approximately 14 to 16 at the moment. But he's still out of pocket as such. But by having it zoned, he could end up with a license that's less than someone else because he hasn't got the effort units in the zone. That's the flavour of the month, if we want to term it that way.
So let's say the region that we're talking about here, and we can make a map available of the regions in the description of the podcast when we're done here, is when Region 3 caps out, what is the impact going to be on operators, and what, in your mind, is going to be the effect on, say, the seafood consumer?
Well, obviously, if that zone has a certain amount of product, such as Region 3, a lot of bugs come out, Moreton Bay bugs come out of that region. So that means the market would have to source them elsewhere. It's actually going to impact the vessels at Banana Prawn in that region as well. So obviously they're not going to have the local banana prawn market. Again, it's going to have to be sourced from elsewhere. And, yeah, there seems to be a trend towards farming, but more so the import side of stuff, which I just don't think is a good thing for the industry or the country as a bloody whole. It just defies logic to me when you start shutting down primary industries.
If Zone 3 does cap out in the way that you describe, let's say that was to happen in the next month or so, does that mean you are without an income then for 4.5 months till 1 November?
Personally, I won't be, because I've got fairly good history in the Region 4, which from my home port of Tin Can Bay is still okay. But we have, like I said, we have been over the winter months going into Region 3 for the past few years. It's just suited my boat better, suited my lifestyle better, and the skipper I've employed occasionally suits him better as well. Not only that, I sell to a fairly small wholesaler by industry standards, and a lot of the Moreton Bay bugs we sell is only from me and one other boat. So we're both going to not be there in the wintertime, and he's going to possibly lose his markets or have to source them elsewhere, and most likely will source them elsewhere.
You mentioned there that there's going to be a potential loss of product locally because of the capping out of the zone that we've been talking about, as one example, because it could happen in another zone at some point in time, that what will fill the market then is potentially imported products. And what that necessarily does to the post-harvest sector is they will have to look elsewhere for continuity of supply of seafood. And that has to have some kind of market effect on you, because if they can't rely on you and others to supply them, then they're going to look for supply chains that are more reliable. And not because you're not reliable at getting the product to them, it's because of government decision making that doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. And where I'm going with this in terms of a question, and I'd like to get your perspective on this if I can, Steve, is, was there any analysis done on the business and supply chain implications of zoning that you're aware of when these zones were put in by the government?
I don't believe there's much done on that, how much socioeconomic impact there actually would be beyond the actual industry itself. As an industry, we actually support quite a few other industries, you know, boilermakers, electricians, refrigeration mechanics and stuff, it's quite phenomenal how much we actually spend as an individual operator to keep the operation going. I'm more concerned with an area capping out and forcing the effort elsewhere, especially when I'm concentrating more on Region 3 because that's the one that looks like it's going to cap out in the near future. Longer term, I think we've got problems with caps when they start reducing the cap consistent with their maximum economic yield instead of maximum sustainable yield, which is the caps were supposed to be originally based on, which is 40% of biomass, but they want it at 60% biomass, which is, I don't believe, conducive to having a good industry, to be honest.
And I'm glad you mentioned it because it hasn't had a lot of play with government, that 60% biomass target is probably the most conservative target for all of our fisheries in any jurisdiction in this country, let alone the world. And I believe that in the Commonwealth fisheries, the biomass target sits between 20 and 40%, 40% considered to be ultra conservative. So why the hell we've gone to 60 when there's not a lot of evidence that there is a sustainability argument to be made that we couldn't stay at the 40% biomass target is, one, not good policy making, and two, conserving the resource for who? If the resource is there to be harvested and we're not allowed to because they've just set the bar so high that it's difficult to go out and commercially fish, what do you see as a potential fix that would help alleviate some of the problems that we're seeing?
Well, unfortunately, though, I think they've gone down a path a bit far to do what I would actually do, but it still basically comes back to maybe even effort unit value. Make it proportionate reduction across the board rather than attacking individuals. The caps, I believe, are way too low. When I challenged a fisheries researcher about their data, I actually call it shit because it just doesn't compute. His response was quite angry, and he used words assume, estimate, approximate, believe, guess in his attack, his defense of his research or their research. I'm not saying their research in what they've looked at is wrong. I'm just saying it's not enough. It's not got enough variables involved, because as far as variables involved, it's just phenomenal if you start looking at the Queensland East Coast trawl. To compare it to the Gulf of Carpentaria and Spencer Gulf trawl, where they're the shining light, they're just not in the same category at all. It's too much of a multi-species fishery, and the boat sizes are variable, and a lot of people are fishermen for lifestyle, not to make a hell of a lot of money. But the trouble with the Queensland fisheries is they've lost, how would you say, they've gained a lot of distrust from fishermen. You know, you bring up things that were said at meetings 6 or 7 years ago, and their response is, I don't recall saying that. I mean, I know they said it. They know they said it as far as I'm concerned, but they're not going to admit to it because it basically undermines some of their research to the point of, I was saying a certain catch rate that they say is in play or the amount of Great Barrier Reef zone that's actually trawled, which should actually be able to be determined from VMS data. You know, it's down from 19% of the area down to something like 12%. So we've had a reduction in area, whether it's through closures or whether it's just through the change of business. You know, it's probably one of the things that scares me the most. I feel like we're being micromanaged in our business by the government. We're not getting options to actually run our business. And it's very hard to, basically, with the cap as opposed to effort units owned, like I said, we can't get to use them necessarily. How can you go to a bank and borrow money when you don't, you can say you own this many nights, but you really may not be able to do them. There's no definite that I'm going to be able to do so many nights a year. There's no definite in that. I could have a breakdown, a cap gets reached, and I'm going to sit down even longer.
Steve, this has been an interesting conversation. I want to keep this going, so I'd love to come back to you at some point for more discussions. But before we go, what message would you send to the Minister for Fisheries, given that he's the minister for this, for our fisheries? What would you say to him about what you're seeing with the reform, and what would you want him to do different if you had the chance to change his mind on how we're being managed?
Well, I would have to say I wouldn't have had the zones in the first place. I would have just went with an effort unit value because the effort units were already in place, have been for 21 going on 22 years now. With the effort unit value, you could have made it fluid. You could make it fluid to each region. You wouldn't even have to zone them in a region. You could just each region, let's say a scallop replenishment zone, if you ever had an opening there again, you could make the effort unit 3-for-1 for that matter. You know, that way you're going to make a business decision on where you go. If you don't have enough units, you won't go to those spots that are going to attract a higher usage. The advantage I would have thought would be you're not going to get disparity between the value of the license. An effort unit is an effort unit. Like I said, people have been paying for that privilege as such, and to have it reduced or replaced or manipulated into a situation where it's not fair across the board. I mean, none of it's going to be fair to everyone. There's always going to be winners and losers, but at the moment there seems to be I don't know, how would you describe it? There's just no thought for the smaller operator, you know, whatsoever.
Steve, yeah, I hear what you're saying, and it's not something that I haven't heard through the reform process, and I think it's one of many problems that we've got. But look, Steve, thank you for your time.
Yep, no worries.
For those listening, I've been speaking to Steve Taylor, a commercial trawl fisher in Queensland. Thank you again for joining me. This conversation is the start of more conversations around the Queensland trawl fishery and issues in this fishery as part of the ongoing so-called reform process led by the Queensland State Government. We'll be back with a lot more content. So thank you for joining us, and we'll catch everyone on the next podcast.